This meeting is now being recorded.
All right. Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 2 Legal Regulatory Issues Call held on Thursday, the 18th of January, 2018. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connector Room. If you're only on the audio bridge, would you please let yourself be known now? Okay, hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. And with this, I'll turn it back over to Sophia Fang. Please begin.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the What Track 2 Legal Regulatory Calls, the first call in the new year 2018, and Happy New Year to everyone. So today we're going to discuss our progress documents on high-level agreements and further deliberations on the two topics. First one will be the applicant terms and conditions, and the second is the reserve names. So first, I will ask for any SOI updates from the group. If there's any, so please speak up. I heard no, I have no updates. So I will turn the floor to Michael, which will introduce our progress documents on applicant terms and conditions and the deliberations. Michael, they're yours.
Thank you, Sophia. Good afternoon, everyone. Good evening to many of you. So today we'll be going over our proposed path forward for the applicant terms and conditions. This topic was not originally one that was raised by participants. Sorry, not originally part of the issue report, but it was raised by participants that it should be reviewed. And so with that, what we've done is we've already explored and discussed this subject. I believe this is our third time. And we've done it in detail. And we looked at it, all the sections. There's about 14 sections in total with the applicant terms and conditions when you apply for a new GTLD. These are actually in the applicant guidebook for those who have not seen these before. But there's 14 sections there, and we've identified three sections, 3, 6, and 14, that may benefit from some of our recommendations. Now, just so everyone understands, what we've done is we've provided some summaries or semi-summaries of the sections alongside our summaries of our progress here so that we can kind of give everyone some background information as to what these summaries, as to what these sections entail. So with that, I'm going to move through section 3, 6, and 14 in order, and I will stop what we've done we've organized this into summary, deliberations, high-level agreements so far, and next steps for each of these sections. So what I'll do is I will stop at deliberations, and then at that point I'll ask if anyone has any questions. If anyone does have any questions, I just ask you to wait until that time so we can move in an orderly fashion and timely fashion. All right, thank you very much. So with Section 3, our summary of Section 3 is actually quoted directly from the section itself and highlights the main area that we've deliberated on for possible policy recommendations. Applicant acknowledges and agrees that ICANN has the right to determine not to proceed with any and all applications for new GTLDs and that there is no assurance that any new additional GTLDs will be created. The decision to review, consider, and approve an application to establish one or more GTLDs and to delegate new GTLDs after such approval is entirely at ICANN's discretion. ICANN reserves the right to reject any application that ICANN is prohibited from considering under applicable law or policy, in which case any fees submitted in connection with such application will be returned to the applicant. And our deliberations from this highlighted two big areas where we could make policy recommendations. And from these discussions held in the work track, as well as from the CC2 comments, there appears that there is unison from many respondents to clarify the language in the provision so that ICANN cannot unilaterally reject an application without an appropriate reason. So others also recommend referencing documents that should be read in conjunction with this section, such as applicable provisions from the ICANN bylaws and sections of the applicant guidebook on eligibility, evaluation process, and review process. So pretty much what we're looking to do is we want to clarify the language within this section, saying that ICANN does have the unilateral ability to reject an application, but only by those reasons identified in the applicant guidebook pertaining to eligibility, evaluation process, and the review process, but in such case, they need to provide appropriate reason to do so. So does anyone have any questions on these deliberations? Cheryl, go ahead.
Oh, thanks, Michael. Cheryl Langenor for the record. I guess my only balk is within the language that is outlined in the deliberation. Without an appropriate reason to someone like me immediately says, in whose opinion, right back at that, prove it is or isn't appropriate. So wanting to avoid wiggle room, I think is something we need to look at. I also think that perhaps what's important is a rationale is given, and I don't know then whether that opens up for counter-argument and debate and perhaps legal action, but I'm just wondering about those things. Thanks.
Thanks, Cheryl, and I agree that appropriate reason is vague, so it might help to clarify that. Christina, did you want to respond to Cheryl? Do you have something different?
I see something different. One.
Okay. Okay.
So the first is, I think the recent IRP panel declaration in Islam and Halal raises a real question as to whether ICANN does in fact have the ability to exercise unilateral discretion under the bylaws. Independent of that, though, if I'm understanding correctly, what I think we are saying is not that it's up to ICANN's discretion. They can only do it in accordance with applicable law or policy or bylaws. What I think we're actually saying is that the decision to review, consider, and approve an application to establish one or more GTLDs and to delegate new GTLDs after such approval may be, I think we need to link, I'm actually not doing a good job of wordsmithing on the fly, but I think we need to link the rejection to the three categories that, as I understand it, we're saying are the only bases on which they can make that decision, that it's rejected for law, bylaws, or other policies.
Thank you, Christina, and I agree with that. I think we need to further wordsmith this out, take this out, and spend some time with it to better provide a clarifying statement for policy recommendations. Jeff, you have your hand raised. I was assuming you're going to respond to Cheryl. Am I correct?
Respond to this overall.
All right.
Thanks. This is Jeff Newman. I agree with Christina's comments, and I don't think we need to wordsmith for the initial report the language, but really state the concept, which is as kind of Christina had mentioned it, which is, that ICANN should really, while it has discretion to reject applications, it needs to do so in accordance with bylaws, the applicant guidebook itself, policies, and then perhaps there's also some discussion going on with the technical community about ICANN being able to stop the process if there's some issues with the roots or stability, whatever. I forgot the exact language. But I think the high-level concept where there's agreement is that we don't agree with the language that's currently in the applicant terms and conditions, and that we think the ability to reject an application needs to be limited to certain circumstances, so as we've discussed. So I think, as Christina says, kind of we have to be crystal clear that the discretion is limited to certain circumstances. And let's not do legal language wordsmithing for the preliminary report at least, but let's make sure we capture the concept as Christina's representing it. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff, and I agree with that. I think that will tackle what Cheryl's getting at in regards to rationale. And with that, I just want to make sure we have a crystal clear recommendation to the overall, or perhaps recommendation isn't the correct word, but a crystal clear summary of what we want to say. This, as it is worded here, was actually done just by me and without any review by anyone else, so this would definitely benefit from the input of others. So we've kind of already talked about the high-level agreement, but as for next steps, we're already leaning in that area, but the working track should focus on agreeable wording for the recommendation. The work track may not want to dictate the exact wording of the revision, as Jeff got into, but offering suggestions for where language should be improved would be very helpful. So with that, if there's no other questions on Section 3, I'll move into Section 6. All right, let's get this ball rolling. Okay, so Section 6, this deals with the covenant not to sue. Applicant releases ICANN from any claims by applicant related to ICANN's review, applicant's withdrawal, or ICANN's decision of application. That might be a typo. But applicant agrees not to challenge ICANN in courts in regards to any final decision made by ICANN in regards to the application. So there's a lot of input from this. One specific proposal, and I think this is actually put together by Jeff and had a lot of input from others in one of our previous calls. I think, Jeff, you put this together on the fly at the call at probably back in, I want to say, February of 2017. But this proposal is actually put forward as a revision to the current what is currently written in Section 6. So ICANN must build into the new GTLD program appeals mechanisms to include the ability for applicants to challenge the decisions of the ICANN staff, the ICANN board, and or any entity's delegated decision-making authority over the assignment, contracting, and delegation of new GTLDs. Such appeals mechanism must include the ability to review those decisions on the merit and not only with respect to whether ICANN violated the bylaws. Only with such an appeals process performed by an independent entity could ICANN then include a covenant not to sue in the applicant terms and conditions. However, the covenant not to sue shall not apply to cases alleging fraud, negligence, or willful misconduct. The majority of the CC2 comments also support the idea of having this type of appeals mechanism in place. One of the ALEX comments did stand out, and they suggest that if an appeals are allowed, that they should only be allowed when decision is based on an error of fact that ICANN has available at the time. So the high-level agreement is to have that there seems to be pretty much overall consensus for an appeals mechanism. I don't think anybody and all the comments and all the discussion that we had was against this idea. And for next steps, any recommendation from this working track would benefit from more details on structure and criteria for an appeals mechanism, but I think we would definitely benefit from working with other work tracks to flesh out the recommendation, perhaps work track 3 and work track 1 would also want to get in on this idea, but that might be something we want to discuss at the full working group level. And Christina, yes, I know it's your comment that you oppose the covenant not to sue. I'm assuming you in your presentation, my apologies if I mistake that, but you oppose the covenant not to sue regardless of any appeals mechanism. And I think in the last decision on .web, one of the recent court decisions on .web, it was upheld that the covenant not to sue was, in fact, justified. Jim, you've got your hand up, and then I welcome anyone else to raise their hand.
Yep, great. Thanks, Michael. Jim Prendergast. Yeah, you know, maybe on next steps, I agree with the, you know, the concept of this appeals mechanism. What I am concerned about is who's actually going to set the rules for those procedures. I know we're still on a preliminary draft, but I worry that if we leave this to ICANN and ICANN Legal to develop, it's probably going to turn out looking like something we're not going to be happy with. So just, I don't know if there's a way to bulk up the next steps, and, you know, I could take a look at it, you know, after the call, but somehow, you know, it's incumbent upon the PDP working group to come up with some ideas around this, or, you know, maybe instruct it as part of the implementation team that deals with this eventually. But I think the community needs to have a equal part in developing the rules and procedures around any appeals mechanism as much as ICANN Legal does. Thanks.
Thank you, Jim. And Steve just highlighted that WorkTrack 3 is actually considering the appeals mechanism as part of its topic and accountability mechanisms. So this one is kind of dependent. I'm just trying to figure out how we will go about working about this, because I think let's have a bit more planning for this on the leadership level as well as in this working track. Oh, Jeff, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, from that concept, I think it's enough for us to say that there needs, WorkTrack 2, to state that there needs to be an appeals mechanism. Actually, let me go back to my first comment that I put on the chat. In line with what Christina said, I think our report needs to state that some members of the working group oppose the covenant not to sue as a concept. If, however, such a covenant not to sue remains, then we recommend, you know, this other language. But then, Michael, I think it's enough for us to say that or defer the entire appeals discussion to WorkTrack 3. And I don't think we need to go over any more details on an appeals mechanism. But let's make sure we take Jim's comment that we just got and any others that we get during this call and refer that to WorkTrack 3 so they don't lose what was just said. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. I fully support a baton pass to WorkTrack 3, but offer my help in any way that they might need it. Is there anyone else that would like to comment on this? I see a lot of comments in the chat on the IRP. I'm not capturing this in full, so if anyone would like to comment on this, that would be greatly appreciated, just for those that are only on audio and for the record. Just reading what Heather said, there was a presentation to SOAC leaders yesterday on the new IRP and what SOACs will need to do to participate in that process. But we need to consider this, the TNCs, in light of that new process. Definitely. And then, oh, Jeff, you have your hand up again. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. And this is Jeff Newman. I don't disagree that we need to kind of pay attention to what's going on with the IRP you know, what's going to happen in light of that. But I do want to make a clear statement that even with an IRP, the new IRP still mostly looks at procedural elements and the bylaws. The appeals we're talking about here, at least if we'll agree with what's written in that bullet point, deals more with a merits-based a substantive-based appeal on the merits of the action taken by ICANN or the evaluators, as opposed to whether something violates the bylaws or not. So I just want to be clear that this appeals mechanism, while we should pay attention to the accountability mechanisms, it is very different and much more focused on substance. Thanks.
Thank you, Steph. So anyone else that would like to comment on Section 6? Hearing none, let's move on to Section 4. Oh, Cheryl, go on ahead.
Thanks, Michael. Sheriff, the record. Just my response to Jeff's intervention, again, in a very much personal capacity, but in the capacity of someone who's been relatively closely watching the development of the IRP, new version of it, process out of the accountability workstream 1/2, because it's an overarching issue that's run across all of our timing. I think one of the main points, of course, is that the new IRP model is very much not limited to the bylaws issues. And that is, of course, I will definitely yield absolutely untested as a mechanism. But the principles and practice, the mechanisms by which the IRP is now designed to operate, I think have an awful lot of, if nothing else, good model and very smart thinking having gone into the development of the good model. Thanks.
Thank you, Cheryl. Anyone else would like to comment? All right, Section 14, let's move on. So Section 14 was an area that there doesn't seem to be, there seems to be agreement, but I wouldn't say that we have clear as day or crystal clear consensus. Let's just go through that to see if we can't better flesh this one out. So the summary of this section is that applicants understands that ICANN reserves the right to make updates and changes to the applicant guidebook and application process, and that applicant will be subject to such challenges. If such changes are made after an application has been submitted and present material hardship is the applicant has experienced present and material hardship, then ICANN will work to accommodate the applicant. Now, our deliberations from the discussions as well as CC2 comments emphasize the importance of predictability and that we should have a framework for change management, advanced planning, and drawing on lessons learned from the 2012 round. I think the majority of the comments that we had said by the next round we shouldn't have as many problems, but there are, of course, those that said, well, no matter what you do, there's going to be some kind of unexpected turn of events. So change is inevitable at some point. So we need to keep that in mind. But predictability is our best friend in this. Many comments also express that ICANN's ability to make changes to the applicant guidebook should be limited as much as possible. Despite how much we have learned from the 2012 round, and as I just said, complete change is unavoidable and therefore should be allowed to an extent. Many comments said that applicants should be allowed to make changes to their application in order to address the changes made to the applicant guidebook by ICANN. If such changes are unagreeable for an applicant, then full refunds should be provided for those that withdraw. A few comments also said that any changes to the applicant guidebook need to be fully transparent and with the consensus of the GNSO community. So we seem to be a little bit, in a similar direction, and there's a lot of comments that support this, but I think that they aren't solidified in one in the exact same road that we want to take. Jeff, you have your hand up. Can you wait till I finish the agreement portion, or would you like to say it now? All right, thank you. So where I think the vibe I've felt from this that our agreement is that deliberations don't focus on a single harmonized theme. So while we can't say that we have overall consensus, most comments do focus on allowing to change applications in coherence with changes made to the applicant guidebook by ICANN. Again, predictability is our best friend moving forward, but framework should be laid out for how ICANN can make changes to the applicant guidebook, as well as what applicants can do in response. As for next steps, we need to discuss this to make sure this is what we want to say, and then consider what kind of framework we want to focus on. Jeff, thank you for waiting. You have the floor.
Yeah, sure. No problem. I just raised my hand just to... sorry, Jeff Newman for the record. I think, and maybe I'll volunteer to do this, I think one thing that this section overall, the applicant terms and conditions, could probably have some language in an introduction, which I can, again, I'll volunteer to kind of draft, which I think is something we probably all agree with, is basically that, you know, to describe what the role of a terms and conditions document is, you know, namely to say things like it's to protect ICANN as an organization. But one thing it's not intended to be is to override anything else that's in the applicant guidebook, or, you know, any of the protections, the rights, obligations, et cetera, that are in the rest of the applicant guidebook or otherwise available under ICANN's bylaws. And therefore, when we get into this discussion of with this specific section of making changes to the AGB, it would, as Steve says, will reference the predictability framework. And so the comment here is that, you know, the terms and conditions should not be used as a document by ICANN to get around the other recommendations we have about the predictability framework. And so I think that might join everything together. And I think that's, if you were to boil it all down, at least in my personal, in my mind, a lot of the issues in the terms and conditions, in the applicant terms and conditions, was it was almost like we had spent several years negotiating an applicant guidebook, and with the quick stroke of a pen, you know, ICANN seemed to give its right to ignore everything in the applicant guidebook with this legal terms and conditions. So I'd like to volunteer, if there's no objection, to write an introductory paragraph that kind of discusses that concept.
Thank you, Jeff, for volunteering to do that. I do not object at all for you volunteering. Are there any objections to the concept of the introductory paragraph, though? Oh, Alan, you have your hand up, so go ahead if you'd like.
Thank you. I'm certainly not objecting to what Jeff was suggesting. Looking at those four bullets, the first three I think are, in fact, consensus decisions or positions that I think we can safely go forward with. The last one I have trouble with for two reasons. First of all, it says a few comments, which implies this is a minority position. I'm not sure it really means that, but it sort of implies that. The second part of the concern with the fourth bullet is that if indeed the changes are policy changes, then our rules already say it has to go back to the GNSO. If they are not policy but are clearly, you know, if the implementation of the applicant guidebook that was done presumably slightly wrong and needs to be fixed because of the circumstances, then I don't think it is a GNSO community issue. I think it's a community issue. And, you know, I'm not sure it needs the consensus of the community at all, but in my mind, it's certainly not just the GNSO community if it's mentioned at all. So that last point I have some trouble with moving forward with. The others, I think, are quite descriptive of what we've been discussing all along.
Thanks, Alan. I think the last bullet came out of a comment that was highlighted by the BC and from the CC2. And Jim, I think one of your comments also kind of leaned in this direction as well. I could be wrong if I interpreted that incorrectly. Please let me know. But you have your hand raised as well, so go on ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, in front, I guess. I don't necessarily, I can't remember on this point. I mean, I think I'm on record as saying that changes do need to be, I can't make them unilaterally. But Alan, to your point, the language, I think a few comments probably isn't accurate in the sense that that doesn't mean that there were a lot of comments that took an opposite position. It was just that there, you know, I think as part of the CC2 period, there were some comments that came in that expressed this point. In the absence of, and I don't think there were any comments that expressed the opposite point of this. So maybe there's a better way to rewrite the sentence, but I wouldn't consider it a minority position. I would just consider it a position that has been stated by a few folks, and from my recollection, and others could
challenged me on this is that I don't think it faced any opposition either. Thanks,
Jim. You are correct in that I didn't see any opposition to that concept, but there were only 2 to 3 from my recollection that leaned in this direction, but better wording would probably help the highlight of the deliberation. Alan, please go ahead.
Yeah, just to point out, the CC2 comments were done en masse, and it wasn't an iterative thing, so there was no real opportunity for someone to oppose it if indeed they disagreed with it. So I think we have to take the comments in light of what they were and not assume the absence of opposition. I might not have opposed it in my comment, but I didn't dream anyone else was going to suggest it. So, I think we just have to take the few comments for whatever they're worth and not presume that the lack of negative ones, of one saying the opposite was opposition, was no opposition. Anyway, I think overall we're in the right track.
Thank you, Alan. So yes, and Christina's suggesting different wording too. I agree with that. Let's have better wording for the plenary, and this will go through the full working group as well as a public comment for our preliminary report. So definitely opportunity to oppose if those feel that they need to do so. I think they'll have opportunity to do so. So with that, I would definitely suggest that, I already went through the rest of this. So with that, I will conclude the applicant terms and conditions discussion unless there's anyone else that would like to comment on this or to kind of summarize where we need to be headed for the future. Jeff, any last words? Nope. Okay. All right. Sophia, thank you. I turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Michael, and everyone. So next topic that that we prepared progress documents for is the reserve names. Yes. I will post the link to this document. 1 second.
Hey, Sophia, staff will do that for you. Just tell them which one you want and they'll do it. Oh, you did.
Sure. Right. So basically, from the previous call, the word track has addressed the subject of the reserve names and examining the stream requirements in the second level and also the top level to determine whether the policy should be modified in regards to cases like special characters, two-letter strings, and single-letter strings, etc. And the word track has discovered the discussed requirements around also geographic names, which may require a further debate as well. And as issue will encounter around certain strings, especially those related to geographic regions and regional indicators, as identified in the GATS Beijing Communicate from 2013. So if the WATRAC eventually determines there is many material change are needed to recommendation 5 or composition of reserve name list, as noted in the specification 5 of the base agreement and its usage within the program, then the policy development should be not likely needed. From the discussions happened, there are some deliberations in the second level reserve names, and as follows. The WATRAC has conducted the first pass reviews on the list of reserve names at the reserve name list and string requirements at a tab level, as defined in section 2.2.1.3.2 on the application guidebook, which is linked in the documents. And from discussions, the WATRAC received no significant interest in making changes to the reserve name list in the second level. However, the WATRAC has discussed that some languages could be adjusted to reflect some recent developments related to the release of two letters country code domains at the second level. And there are also a number of CC2 comments addressed certain concerns regarding languages in specification 5, provision 3.2 of the registry agreement, which allows the registry operator to reserve and use up to 100 names at the second level for the operations and promotion of TLD. Also, some concerns regarding the provisions in the specification 5 of the agreement, which allows the RO to reserve an unlimited amount of other domains names that may only be released through an ICANN accredited registrars by third party. As the discussion, the deliberations, from the deliberations, the war tracks and the leadership find there appears to be some general consensus to maintain that the second level reserve name list with minor adjustments. Since there, though there has been no consensus on what minor adjustments should be made, the war track suggested that that would be beneficial to further review the second level reserve name list and define the detailed recommendations. So what we think we should further do is that we're gonna look at the second level reserve name list and discuss some recommendations we haven't discussed previously. To see if we can have some further feedback and comments and to define that recommendation. In the link that you can find the second level reserve name list and Julie and Steve, can you actually open the link so that everybody can see in the same screen. Okay, So we will just
No, Sophia, sorry, I think you were moving on to moving on to the overall table, but go on in.
Sure. So in the overall table, we're not going to go through each one of the categories. But just highlighted those ones that with no changes suggested, which is the symbols and single letters and single and two digit, and then we'll probably just highlight those ones with some possible recommendations. We have some recommendation on ICANN IANA names to add PTI and any additional new names related to the IANA. And also suggestions include some special use domain names in AGB sections on the reserve names at a top level. So if anybody have any comments, just please raise your hands to comment on some of the items here. And then for the single letter and single digit combinations, some work track members support single letter digit combinations if there is no technical reason to prevent this. And for the NEAT and PUIs, yes?
I think that you might be looking at a different document as far as the possible recommendations. I don't think we're seeing that in this, what you've just said in the possible recommendation in G sorry, the row G.
Oh, I'm sorry. I mean the top level tables.
Oh, you're reading the top level. Okay.
I'm sorry. It's because two Excel files just shifting around. All right. So for the second level. Any combination of the two letters and digit, there was a suggestion that the policy could be updated to mention recent implementation guidance on the two-letter codes at the second level. And then for the IOCs and for the Olympics, International Olympic Committee and the Red Cross Committee restrictions, the group World Track will likely not make recommendations due to ongoing works outside the work group, but also depending on the other recommendations outside of the other recommendations and policy made outside the work group. For the international, for the IGOs, the groups were likely to make recommendation also depending on the ongoing works outside the work group. So that's basically three possible recommendations on the second level reserve name. And for all the others, reserve name categories in the topics, there was no recommendations for changes so far.
Are there any questions on the second level reserve names? This is pretty much bringing policy up to speed with what's implemented already.
All right. So, as you know, hand raised. So if you can always have you can always go to the list and let us know if there are any big comments and suggestions, recommendations. And then we should probably move to the top level, reserve name deliberation. So the World Track reviews the list of the reserve name at the top level, also defined in the AGB. The World Track further identify the certain areas in need for further discussion investigations, including the acronym related to the INR transitions and single letters with possible intersection with the World Track 4 topics, and some acronym registry RDDS and the RDS, and some letter and digital combinations, which may require expert inputs and possible intersection with the World Track 4. There were also discussion need to be happened for controversial names, which may require the controversial names, which require some coordination with the limited public interest objections, which discussions in the World Track 3. And for the suggestion, and also there's some suggestion to allow any strength that does not pose the security and stability risk, that should not be included in the reserve name list for top level. Next one, appears to be some general agreements within the World Track that special use domain names should be included in the list of reserve names at the top level in the AGB. And the last is the other CC2 comments looked at the additional areas to revisit with respect to reserve name at a top level. So besides those areas that need further discussions, geographic names at the top level is also another topic that subjects to some ongoing webinar sessions and cross-community discussions, and also depends on the WhatTrack 5's considerations that will be taken into consideration when making the recommendations to the top level. So from the deliberations and discussions, there appears to be consensus to maintain the top level reserve name list. And so far we haven't reached the consensus on whether any specific changes in the top level reserve name list should be recommended. And then it's probably the best for the next step for us to further review the top-level reserve name list, also take into consideration of all the dependencies and ongoing outcomes from the other WhatTrack. And there is a link in the progress documents for the top-level reserve name list. So for those who are not being able to see in the audios, so I mentioned that the in the table for the chat icon IANA names, there are some recommendations to add the PTIs and any additional new names related to IANA, and also to include the special use domain names in the AGB section on reserve names at the top level. And for the single letters and single digit combinations, some support are expressed for single letter digit combinations if there's no technical reasons to prevent this. And for the NIC and HUIs, there are supports express for adding RDS and RDDS in the name list. And for the geographic names, like I mentioned, this item will be discussed by WhatTrack 5, and further recommendations are expecting from WhatTrack 5. I think so this is so far we got from the reserve name list topic, pretty much straightforward. Jeff, you have a comment here. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff Newman. I have an overall comment on both the second level and top level, though they may be likely treated differently. And this has come about, I guess, mostly from second-level discussions, where people have asked for the release of certain names, PTIs, for which they were designed to be reserved. So, in other words, we reserve a whole bunch of Olympic names, but what happens when the Olympic Committee comes in and wants to actually use one of them? And I think Donuts has had several requests to release certain names to seemingly the entities that these names were reserved on behalf. So one thing that's going to merit further discussion by this group is whether we have a policy recommendation on the release of these entities, the release of these names to the entities for which these names are reserved. And I think that's pretty important in the scheme of things, and that's proven to be an issue. So let's make sure we don't lose that issue. I'm not saying we need to define that process in the initial report, but certainly a placeholder for policy recommendation saying that there should be a process for the release of these names, especially IGO, INGO, and there may be a process in that for that particular category, but potentially not for others. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. We have Alan. Wait. Alan, can you go ahead?
Thank you. I know Steve had his hand up, and maybe he wants to go first.
Sure. Steve, can you go first?
Sure. Thanks, Alan. Thanks, Sophia. This is Steve Chan from STEF. And actually, just wanted to put in some comments in reference to what Jeff just raised. First, I would note that there is still ongoing policy development as it relates to IGO acronyms. There are recommendations still sitting with the board pending resolution. The policy that Jeff referenced earlier that just got published, you can see some of the updates on the reserve names list here. Here's a link. And as part of that policy, there's actually an exception procedure related to the updates that were included in that policy. So in that link, you can see in the description for, let's say, International Olympic Committee, in the description it says reservation at second level and then semicolon registration allowed by exception procedure provided in the policy. So at least for those specific categories that were included in that updated policy, there is actually an exception procedure included. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. So, Jeff, does that address that the concerns and questions they have?
Thanks. This is Jeff, and I know Alan has his hand raised, but it does for that particular category for the INGO-IGO, but there are other categories for which there are not defined procedures to release the names. I can't remember Olympic, Red Cross, even the special use names that are reserved, so I'm not remembering all the categories. So for any categories that do not have an exception procedure already, we need to have a policy recommendation that one, that a process should be developed.
Oh, gotcha. Thank you, Jeff. I see Alan's hand is still on. Alan, can you go ahead?
Yes, thank you. The whole issue raised by Jeff and then amended by Steve is an interesting one in that during the policy discussions on, for instance, the various IOC names, there was a very conscious decision and a conscious discussion of do we want to allow exceptions to allow these to be registered by the owning organization, so to speak. And there was a very conscious decision at that point by those groups to say, no, we don't. And, so it's interesting that Steve says that the more recent policy is adding an exception. Our general philosophy has been we are not changing policy that has relatively recently been established. We're a PDP and we can change policy, but we have, I think, decided to try to honor recent policy. So it's an interesting question if there was a conscious decision not to allow second level registrations for those protected names, even by the organization who has the rights to the name, and now we're going to say there is going to be one. So I think that needs to be carefully thought out if we are indeed going to reverse that. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Jeff, you're next. Do you have comments on it?
Yeah, thanks. This is Jeff. I remember that a little bit differently I specifically remember Peter Dengue Thrush, when he was still on the board, got a little annoyed because in 2000, whenever the guidebook was approved, I think some of the organizations that fought to have their names reserved fought that implicitly in that was the right to register those themselves if they wanted it. And I remember Peter Dengue Thrush on one of the board meetings or one of the public forums lashed out and said, no, you guys want it reserved? It's going to be reserved, and we're not going to talk about this anymore. We got to move on. So the conscious decision was not a conscious decision by the community, but by the board at the time, is the way I recall it. So while I agree with you on the notion of we generally do not like to go back and reverse policy decisions, this was not a policy decision. This was kind of a top-down, last-minute board action, from what I recall.
Yeah. To be clear, Jeff, I was referring to the discussions that were actually held in the PDPs on the IOC Red Cross and not a board action. And certainly my recollection is there was very much a conscious decision to say, no, we are happy to not have them usable at all. We may each remember these things differently.
Thank you, Jeff and Alan. I think that's a very important discussion for that. So any other suggestions and comments and feedbacks for the progress documents and that need to be taken into consideration by the work group? I see no hand raised. Michael, do you have anything to add?
No, I just think that there are a few commentators that are having up a chat storm here that we might want to let them finish. Or I would just say if there's any comments that anyone wants to say that they bring it to the audio, because we are going to end the call. No? Then Sophia, let's go ahead and call him into it.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for the call, and we will take these recommendations into consideration, and also we'll post the progress documents to the group after the call. So if you have any comments and feedbacks, please send it through emails as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Martha. Thanks, Sophia. Bye.
Thank you. Our next call will be, we'll send an email. Thank you.
Today's meeting is adjourned. Thanks, everyone, for joining. You can disconnect your line. Have a good rest of the night.